Chapter 9. Knowledge of the Royal and Secret Path. Verses 1 through 3.
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Idam tu te guhyatamam pravakshyam yanasuyave. Jnanam vijnana sahitam yajnyatva mokshyase shubhat. Raja vidya, raja guhyam pavitram idam uttamam. Pratyakshavagamam dharmyam susukham kartum avyayam. Ashraddhana purusha dharmasyasya parantapa aprapyamam nivartante mrityu samsara vartmani.
The Blessed Lord said, To you who are free of all intolerance, I shall tell this secret most knowledge, together with its realization, knowing which, you will be freed from all that is impure. The royal science, the royal secret, this is the unexcelled purifier, the attainment of which is evident, meritorious, immutable, and very easy to accomplish. The persons not having faith in this law, Dharma, O scorcher of enemies, not finding me, keep returning on the path of death and the worldly cycles. Real knowledge and higher knowledge are described separately here. Knowledge relating to the factual world is considered to be real knowledge, yet there is another, higher state of knowledge in which one attains complete freedom from all pain and misery. Before one attains the highest state of knowledge, he should have knowledge of the real. Real here means that which is subject to sense perception. When one comprehends the nature of the temporal and evident reality, he discovers that all the objects of the external world are ever changing. Then he wants to understand the law underlying all those changes, for he knows that there must be something permanent beyond those changes. He distinguishes between two phenomena. One is subject to change, and the other is eternal. Sri Krishna imparts the secret knowledge of the eternal to Arjuna, but this does not imply that he is being prejudiced in favor of Arjuna. The word guhya, used in the first verse, means hidden, unrevealed, and not comprehended by ordinary minds. But actually, there is no secret in the path of knowledge. Anyone who desires that knowledge can attain it. But one who is engrossed in worldly pleasures and whose mind is dissipated and distracted does not have the power to understand and assimilate the higher knowledge. Thus it remains a secret to him. These verses say that the higher knowledge, the secrets of the royal path, are imparted only to those whose minds are one-pointed, who follow the path of yoga, and who have firmly decided to dedicate their lives to attaining the highest knowledge. A competent teacher instructs his student according to the ability of the student's mind. When the student advances on the path, the teacher goes on revealing further secrets to him that he cannot impart to beginners. The knowledge that is expounded in this chapter is called Raja Vidya, royal knowledge. There is a difference between royal knowledge and other paths. The road that leads one to the royal house is clean and clear and guides the aspirant. The milestones and road markers help him understand how far he has traveled on the path and how far and in which direction he has yet to tread. Modern students tend to follow this path, for it is a highly systematic approach. If one continues to faithfully follow this path, he finally reaches the royal palace where the king resides in his splendid eternal glory. There is another meaning that can be derived from this verse. Raja Vidya is the vidya, knowledge, that helps one to know the secrets of governing a kingdom. How should a raja, king, conduct himself and govern the kingdom? How can an individual govern the kingdom of life within and without? In both situations, the state of equanimity should be attained first, for without it, establishing self-government within or ruling the masses outside is impossible. Leaders should have profound knowledge of life within and without before they assume the duty of leading the masses. One who has not established control and mastery over himself is not capable of leading others. He cannot do justice to his task if he has not yet attained the state of equanimity. With direct experience, the yogi learns to understand all the laws that govern the city of life. He also knows the eternal principle that remains deep-seated in the inner chamber of his being. The yogi learns to govern the city of life and becomes a master, whereas the ordinary person has no knowledge and skill to do so. He is governed and controlled by the forces of nature, and he always wants to enjoy the pleasures of the world. He is enslaved by his desires. One who does not follow the path of yoga, but instead seeks to enjoy the fruits of his actions, is subject to birth and death. It is as though he is born and dies without any purpose. In this chapter, Sri Krishna expounds the profound knowledge that will help Arjuna understand his internal organization so that he can be free from delusion. Sri Krishna first imparts the knowledge of the temporal and real world, and then leads Arjuna to the higher knowledge that can only be attained directly and not through any other source. Knowledge of the scriptures and teachings of the sages do inspire us, but direct knowledge alone enables one to attain the highest wisdom. Verses 4 through 6.
Maya tatam idam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina matsthani sarvabhutani nachaham teshvavasthitah nacha matsthani bhutani pashyame yogam aishwaram bhuta brin nacha bhutastho mamatma bhuta bhavana yatha akashastito nityam vayu sarvatra gomahan tatha sarvani bhutani matsthani tyubadharaya.
All this is pervaded by me, whose form is unmanifest. All beings are dwelling in me. I am not dwelling in them. Nor are the beings dwelling within me. See my yoga of sovereignty. Myself is the bearer of beings, nurturing the beings, yet not dwelling in the beings. As the great wind dwelling in the sky reaches everywhere, so all the beings are dwelling within me. Be certain of this. That which is self-existent, complete, and full in itself does not need any support. The whole universe has arisen from the unmanifested power of the Lord. The entire administration of this universe is governed efficiently by the Lord. All beings rely on that one power, but that power does not rely on any being, for it is independent in and of itself. It nourishes and protects all beings, yet is not bound up in them. Atman is the very cause and source of the activities of all beings. As the air exists in space and moves about in space, so all things have their existence and movement within the Lord. In an organization there are many administrative officers, but above all those governing authorities, there is one who has supreme authority to govern the entire organization. Similarly, in the city of life, there are many governing powers, but overall is Ishwara. In both the individual and the universe, the highest self is the presiding divinity that directs and protects the universe and the individual life. The same governing principle is in the individual as is in the universe. Verses 7 through 10.
Sarva bhutani kaunteya prakritim yanti mamikam kalpakshaye punastani kalpadau visrujamyaham prakritim swam avashtabhya visrujami punah punah bhutagramam imam kritsnam avasham prakriter vashat. Nacha mam tani karmani nibadnanti dhananjaya udasina vadasinam asaktam teshu karmasu maya adhyakshena prakritihi suyate sacharacharam हेतुनानेन कौन्तेय जगत विपरिवर्तते.
All beings, O son of Kunti, come to my own primordial nature, Prakriti, at the end of a cycle, Kalpa, and again at the beginning of the next, I release them in various forms. Controlling my primordial nature, Prakriti, I emit again and again this entire aggregate of beings and elements, which is helpless because of the control of Prakriti. Nor do these acts bind me, O Arjuna, as I remain neutral, above them, unattached to those karmas. With me as supervisor, primordial nature brings forth the animate and the inanimate world. Through this process as the cause, O son of Kunti, the world keeps changing and revolving. According to the Vedic scriptures, half a kalpa, day of Brahma, lasts for 4,326,000,000 human years. That is the time period from the manifestation to the dissolution of the universe. When the universe is dissolved, all beings return to the primordial nature for aeons, and manifestation then begins again with the next half kalpa. This cycle goes on endlessly. The pure self presides over the manifestation of Prakriti, of the universe with all its forms and names. At the time of both dissolution and manifestation, the pure self remains unaffected by actions performed by its primordial nature, Prakriti. The pure self uses Prakriti to manifest the universe. The primordial nature manifests both the animate and inanimate. During the manifestation and dissolution, all beings are helplessly swept up into the grand process. Ultimately, the power over all beings rests with the self. The process of manifestation occurs so that the beings that are manifest may elevate their consciousness and ultimately realize their identity with the universal self. In verse 10, the word suyate is used. It comes from the root su, meaning to bring forth, or to bring forth or to bring about prosperity. Thus, the self brings about the prosperity of all that is manifest. Verses 11 and 12.
Avajananti ma mudha manushim tanumashritam. Param bhava majananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Mogasha moga karmano moga jnana vichetasaha. Rakshasim asurim chaiva prakritim mohinim shritaha.
Only the foolish attribute to me a lesser station when I assume human bodies, not knowing my supreme aspect, which is the great Lord of all beings. Of vain expectations, with vain actions, their knowledge in vain, devoid of wisdom, they have resorted to the enticing, demonic, and evil nature. When there is a great need, the Lord assumes a human form to help human beings attain awareness of the Supreme. In his human disguise, the Lord seems to act like a human being, and ordinary people take him as such. They are unable to appreciate his divine qualities that express themselves in his human form. Those who are confused and deluded do not understand and accept the presence of the Lord in a human body. Even for the wise, it is difficult to comprehend how the finite vessel carries the infinite within. How the Lord can resort to a human body that moves about in this world. Many people disregard him, and some even despise him. What he stands for threatens deluded people who are infatuated with the objects and pleasures of the mundane world. They wish to cling to their values and attachments, so they react venomously to any kind of teaching that puts forth a contrary way of living. Thus, many of the great teachers of the world who advocated non-attachment and love were assassinated by those who frantically clung to the world. The worldly person stands for everything that is opposed to the bringers of light, and the bringers of light stand in opposition to the values of the worldly person. The royal power that resides in every human being is very subtle and invisible, and cannot be grasped by sense perception. That power is superior to all other powers. It dwells in every living creature from the minutest to the largest. The ignorant do not recognize and acknowledge the power of powers. In their deluded condition, they despise the Lord by despising other human beings. But truth is always victorious. Their longings and actions eventually prove to be in vain because they are attached and resort to evil. They continue to act foolishly and wrongly, and thus create sorrow and misery for themselves. They are finally brought down by their own actions. It is a law of providence that the ignorant eventually suffer because their actions are motivated by the desire to fulfill their selfish ends. Selfishness contracts the human personality. It does not allow it to expand. But the law of life is expansion, and one who learns to expand his individual consciousness to the universal consciousness by being selfless and not attached finds enjoyment in establishing himself in his true nature, which is peace, happiness, and bliss. Verses 13 through 15.
Mahatmanastu mam partha devim prakritim ashritaha bhajantyananya manaso gnyatva bhutadim avyayam satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha dhudavrataha namasyantascha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate jnana yajnena chapyanye yajanto mam upasate ekatvena prithaktvena bahudha vishvato mukham.
The great-souled ones, however, resorting to the divine nature, devote themselves to me with their minds on no other, knowing me as the immutable origin of all beings and elements, always glorifying me and endeavoring with firmness of observances and vows, always bowing with devotion, ever joined in yoga, they worship me. Others, through the sacrificial observances in knowledge, in unity and multiplicity, worship me in various ways, who am facing in all directions. Great men meditate and contemplate on the divine and thus attain a state of wisdom in which they identify themselves with divinity, and their nature becomes divine. Their minds remain one-pointed in the knowledge that the Lord is the first cause of all beings and is imperishable. With one-pointed devotion, they dedicate their minds, actions, and speech to the Lord alone, and they serve the Lord through their pure devotion. They have a single desire to attain the goal of human life. All of their energies are thus directed toward the Lord. They are resolute in their disciplined way of living, and they practice discipline in all aspects of life. They see the Lord everywhere and in everyone. And they salute everyone because they know that the Lord dwells in every being. There are others who perform sacrifices in the form of knowledge. Such a yogi surrenders all that he knows with his limited mind. He empties himself and opens himself to divine wisdom. Knowledge is a means to attaining the goal of life. The wealth of a yogi is his knowledge. He has nothing but knowledge. He has no desires, wants, or attachments. In the path of self-surrender, one surrenders all that he has, and the yogi has only his knowledge to surrender. Thus, the yogi sacrifices his knowledge and becomes one with the Absolute. He realizes the Absolute One without a second. He does not go to a state of unconsciousness, but remains fully conscious, identifying himself with the center of pure consciousness. That is the most profound state of wisdom, and not a state of unconsciousness, as some modern psychologists assume. There are others who serve the Lord in various ways. Some perform their duties skillfully with full devotion and with an attitude of selfless service. They follow the spiritual path with great determination. Such great people always work for the prosperity of all beings. Great men and Mahatmas know the power of the Absolute to be the means by which society can prosper. Maintaining harmonious attitudes, they perform selfless actions for the well-being of all people, and they are always enthusiastic in the spirit of selfless service. These great people are always modest, saintly, and generous. They always work for the welfare of both the individual and society. Verses 16 through 19.
Aham kratur aham yajnaha swadaham aham aushadam mantroham aham evajyam aham agnir aham hutam pitahamascha jagato mata dhata pitamaha vedyam pavitram omkar ruksama yajurevacha gatir bharta prabhu sakshi nivasa sharanam surut Prabhavaha pralayaha sthanam nidanam bijam avyayam. Tapamyaham aham varsham nigranyam utsrujamicha. Amrutam chaiva mrutyuscha sadasachaham arjuna.
I am the sacrificial act. I am the sacrifice. I am the offering given to the saintly ancestors. I am the herb of oblation. I am the mantra. I am the clarified butter. I am the fire. And I am the act of burning the offering. I am the father of this world, mother, sustainer, grandfather, the one to be known, the purifier, Om, Rigveda, Samaveda, as well as Yajurveda. I am the goal, nurturer, master, witness, dwelling, refuge, friend, origin, dissolution. Place, pledge, the imperishable seed. I scorch, I release the rain and hold it back also. I am the principle of immortality as well as death, existence as well as non-existence, O Arjuna. The Lord is the self-existent reality. He is never born and therefore is not subject to change, death, or decay. He remains the same in the past, present, and future. The origin and dissolution of the universe is all within him. He is both immortal and mortal. He exists and yet does not exist. Nothing exists without his existence. Therefore, he is everything. When a ritual is performed and a sacrifice is offered, the collection of herbs used for the offering, the mantras, the clarified butter to be offered to the fire, and the act of offering are all different forms of the same principle, Brahman. The dedication, the offering, the fire, the oblation offered, and the one who offers are all Brahman. The giver, the enjoyer, the food, and the eater are nothing else but Brahman. Although objects in the world seem to be different from one another, they are in fact various aspects of the same reality. As various kinds of ornaments are made out of the same gold metal, so the underlying principle of different forms, names, and objects of the world is one and the same. The Lord is the father and mother of this universe. The universe arises from him. It is sustained by him, and it is finally absorbed into him alone. The highest Lord is Om. The syllable Om is the designator of the Lord. The phrase Avati, iti Om, means one who protects is called Om. Only the Lord protects and no one else. All four Vedas, Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva, praise the same Supreme Lord. They are also aspects of the Lord. The fire, sun, moon, stars, wind, water, and earth are but forms that have come from one absolute reality. The aspirant should be constantly aware of only one reality, though he experiences that reality in various names and forms. When one becomes aware of the unity in diversity, he realizes the pure self, the self of all. Verses 20 through 22.
Traividyamam somapa putapapa yajnyairishtva svargatim prarthayante te punyam asadya surendra lokam ashnanti divyan divideva bhogan. Etam bhuktva sarva lokam vishalam kshine punye martya lokam vishanti. Evam trayi dharma manuprapanna gatagatam kama kama labhante. Ananyaschintayento mam yejana paryupasate. Tesham nityabhiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyam.
The master of the three sciences, vidyas, who drinks soma, and whose sin is purified, having performed sacrifices, seek to reach heaven. They, reaching the meritorious world of the King of Gods, enjoy the celestial pleasures of gods in heaven. They, having enjoyed that vast celestial world, upon the exhaustion of merit, enter the world of mortals, thus resorting to the law of threefold existence, desiring desires. They remain in the cycles of coming and going. Those people, however, who having no other, worship contemplating me, I bear their prosperity in this world and the next, as they are ever joined to me in yoga. Those who enjoy the objects of the world and desire to have the same enjoyment in heaven perform good deeds. Good deeds like charity, sacrifice and austerities are no doubt superior to selfish deeds. But reaping the fruits of one's actions, even if the actions are good, brings only momentary happiness. One who performs good deeds enjoys the fruits of his actions in the yonder world. But even heavenly enjoyments do not bring everlasting happiness. After experiencing joys in the yonder world, one is reborn again and returns to the mortal world. But the aspirant who is fully committed to self-realization devotes his whole life to the Lord alone, desiring neither worldly pleasures nor heavenly joys. And the Lord looks after and protects those who are totally absorbed in Him. Their happiness never diminishes. It is everlasting. The Vedas expound three different vidyas, sukta vidya, knowledge of good utterances and thoughts, yajur vidya, knowledge of sacrificial acts, and sama vidya, knowledge of meditation and devotion. The aspirant who wishes to obtain the objects of his enjoyment makes efforts with good thoughts, good actions, meditation, and devotion to increase those pleasures. Such an aspirant is called a sakama, desiring worshipper. The vast majority of aspirants worship and perform devotional practices and various types of rituals and sacrifices in order to secure specific desires. In today's world, most people pray to God to fulfill their wants. They worship God to secure the fruit that will give them enjoyment. Whatever good they do in the world is to secure objects that bring pleasure, and they aspire to have pleasure in heaven as well. That is called sakama upasana, devotion with a motive. In ancient times, aspirants performed various kinds of sacrifices for the sake of prosperity, for the sake of the common good, or to fulfill desires for earthly enjoyments. Some aspirants performed a special kind of ritual called soma sacrifice. Those who used to drink soma wanted their mundane desires fulfilled. In ancient times, soma sacrifice was performed as a ritual, and the preparations were done with austerities. From the very beginning, the ritual was performed with a single motive in mind, which helped the participants to concentrate on the specific motive for which the ritual was performed. Much has been written in the Vedic scriptures about soma, the way it was obtained, prepared, and used while performing sacrifice. It is said that soma is a creeper found in the higher mountains, and that when its juice is extracted, it creates a delightful intoxication and stimulation in the mind. The ancients knew a profound way to extract the juice of the soma creeper, and often used it in their rituals. It has been said that soma has the capacity to help the aspirant make his mind concentrated by bringing about a supersensual joy. The yogic method of drinking soma is entirely different and unique, and only a fortunate few yogis know how to derive soma from within and thus remain elevated in their spiritual endeavors. When the yogi applies Kechari Mudra by inserting his tongue upward behind the roof of the palate, from there he tastes the soma or nectar that is ever flowing from Brahmarandra, a cavity in the crown of the head. With the help of that nectar, the yogi prolongs the span of his life. Those who do not know how to take that nectar remain brutish, because that ever-flowing nectar is then taken by the kundalini. That is why the primal force in the human body, kundalini, remains intoxicated and asleep. Depriving kundalini of that nectar, the yogi consciously drinks it himself. When the primal force, kundalini, does not receive the nectar, she wakes up and ascends through all the chakras to the final abode at Sahasrara chakra. Then all that has been unconscious and unknown comes forward, and one attains the knowledge of unity. This is one of the rarest practices experienced by yogis. It requires an accomplished yogic pose and bandhas, locks, along with Kechari Mudra. This method of taking soma leads the yogi to a state of divine intoxication in which he is aware of the self only. The external way of extracting soma from herbs is far inferior to this method. The ancient soma has been compared to the natural and synthetic hallucinogenics used today, such as mescaline, peyote, and LSD. Though these are different from soma, they may well be in the same family of hallucinogens and may produce similar results. People today take such drugs for various purposes, and their experiences match their purposes, as well as vividly bringing forth latent impressions from the unconscious. If one is preoccupied with sensory pleasure, such pleasure is greatly heightened by hallucinogens. And if one is inclined toward spiritual experiences, it is those experiences that are heightened. Except for the use of peyote by American Indians, today there is no systematic ritual to direct the hallucinogenic experience along beneficial lines, though modern experimenters have attempted to develop ritualized and guided hallucinogenic sessions with that purpose in mind. There is considerable controversy today about whether hallucinogens are beneficial or harmful. Arguments have been put forth for both the positive and negative effects of their use. It is true that psychoactive drugs can lead one to intense concentration on a single object, and that concentration can lead one to a vivid exploration of the unconscious, to altered states of consciousness, to a sense of transcending time, and to the awareness of the illusory nature of one's ordinary mode of experiencing. One then sees that his ordinary reality is insubstantial and only a relative reality. Yet one may ask, as vivid as these experiences might be, are they genuine or merely hallucinations? Are they the same as those experiences of the yogis who develop concentration and a one-pointed mind through their own efforts? It seems that hallucinogens merely bring forth that which is already in one's unconscious mind. They give one a glimpse of supersensual realms and of the powers and forces that underlie the material world experienced by the senses. But such drugs cannot lead one beyond his already developed capacities to know, comprehend, and enjoy the subtle realms and underlying truths. And they cannot lead one beyond manifestation to experience the unmanifest Brahman. While hallucinogens may help one to become less identified with the waking reality and to become aware of alternate realities, one who uses them may pay a great price for ingesting them. The experience itself gives a shock to the nervous system, and if one is not prepared for such experiences, he can become emotionally disturbed. The intense energy released through such experiences drains one and subsequently leads him toward a tamasic state from which it takes some time to recover his energy. Repeated use may lead one to become burned out, depressed, and unable to perform his actions in the world. Thus, he does not accomplish the purpose of his life. He becomes passive and dependent on such experiences, and in between, slips back to a state of inertia and lethargy. There is no shortcut to self-realization. The path must be followed with determination. Through self-discipline, one must attain non-attached action, meditation, and contemplation. Actions performed with motives or desires do not lead to everlasting happiness. Yogis, therefore, devote their whole lives to performing actions without any desire to reap the fruits of their actions. Such great yogis lead society and live for the welfare of others, for they do not have any selfish desires. Verses 23 through 25.
तेपि मामेव कौन्तेय यजन्त अविधिपूर्वकम् अहम् हि सर्वयज्ञानां भोक्ता च प्रभुरेव च न तु माम् अभिजानन्ति तत्त्वेनातश्च्यवन्ति ते यान्ति देवव्रता देवान् पितॄन् यान्ति पितृव्रताः भूतानि यान्ति भूतेज्या यान्ति मद्याजिनोऽपि माम्.
Even those devotees of other deities who sacrifice endowed with faith, they too, O son of Kunti, sacrifice to me alone, even though in an inappropriate manner. I alone am the receiver of the offerings of all sacrifices, and I alone am their master. However, they do not recognize me as such, and therefore they slip from reality. Those whose vows are directed toward gods go to the gods. Those whose vows are addressed to the ancestors go to the ancestors. Those who sacrifice to spirits go to those spirits. Those who sacrifice to me come to me. In any way one worships, whether it be to any god, deity, or other aspect of Brahman, he in fact worships Brahman alone. All worship, ritual, and prayer are offered to the one Brahman only, for Brahman alone exists without a second. All the reverence and respect shown by the worshipper is actually shown to Brahman. But the ignorant who do not recognize Brahman fall back to the world because of their ignorance. A worshipper identifies himself with the worshipped one. Those who worship spirits identify themselves with the nature of spirits, whereas those who worship Brahman identify with the nature of the Lord. When a student starts seeking, he wants to try all the methods of sadhana mentioned in the scriptures. He does not have the patience to steadily practice one path, but changes his path every now and then. Some of the ignorant ones even worship spirits because they do not have knowledge of the absolute truth. These verses contain a warning to all seekers that they should carefully understand the various paths and select the pure and clear path that leads to Brahman alone. It is important for aspirants to select a valid and profound path so that they reach the highest Brahman. A competent teacher or yogi can help the student select the best path for him to follow. Verses 26 through 28.
Patram pushpam phalam toyam yo me bhaktya prayachati tadaham bhaktyupakrutam ashnami prayatatmanah yat karoshi yadashnasi yajjuhosi dadasi yat yat tapasyasi kaunteya तत्कुरुष्व मदर्पणम् शुभा शुभ फलैरेवं मोक्षसे कर्मबंधनैः सन्यास योग युक्तात्मा विमुक्तो मामुपैष्यसि.
Whoever offers me a leaf, flower, fruit, or water with devotion, that gift of a person of controlled self offered with devotion, I accept. Whatever you do, sacrifice or give, whatever austerities you perform, O son of Kunti, surrender that as an offering unto me. Thus you will be freed from the bondages of actions, whose fruits are beautiful or ugly. Yourself, united in the yoga of renunciation, liberated, will reach me. The Lord accepts any offerings, no matter how insignificant, even a leaf, flower, fruit, or a small amount of water, if it is given with full devotion. This does not mean that aspirants should use only these objects for worship. It means that which is important is the feeling of devotion. The Lord does not need anything, for everything already belongs to Him. Offerings are only expressions of devotion. Those who offer the fruits of their actions to others without any selfish motivation, no matter how big or small the fruits, are making offerings to the Lord. Learning to give is a great virtue. It is as good for oneself as it is for others. By offering fruits, one learns giving and is benefited in two ways. He practices non-attachment and acknowledges the presence of the Lord in others. Thus, giving is a step toward non-attachment, and at the same time acknowledges the presence of God in all beings. Verse 26 teaches the aspirant to give or offer whatever he can according to his capacity. Those who acquire this habit cannot stop giving, and finally they give all that they have as an offering to the Lord. Giving and giving up bring one and the same result. These two virtues are the highest of all and help the aspirant in self-unfoldment. Any selfless action performed is a devotion to the Lord. When the aspirant dedicates everything to the Lord and directs all his energy with mind, action, and speech to the Lord alone, his actions and the fruits of his actions no longer bind him. Actions performed as worship to the Lord do not create bondage. Great men solely dedicate their lives and perform all their actions for the selfless service of mankind. They do not ever experience bad or good fruits of their actions, because they live for the service of the Lord performed through service to mankind. Verses 29-33.
Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dveshyosti napriyah ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya mayite teshu chapyaham. अपि चेत् सुदुराचारो भजते माम अनन्यभाक् साधुरेव स मन्तव्यः सम्यक् व्यवसितो हि सः क्षिप्रं भवति धर्मात्मा शश्वत् शान्तिं निगच्छति कौन्तेय प्रतिजानीहि न मे भक्त प्रणश्यति माम हि पार्थ व्यपाश्रित्य योऽपि स्युपापयोनयः स्त्रियो वैश्यास्तथा शूद्रास्तेऽपि यान्ति परां गतिम् किं पुनर्ब्राह्मणा पुण्या भक्त्या राजर्षयस्तथा अनित्यम असुखम लोकम इमं प्राप्य भजस्व माम.
I am alike to all beings. No one is hated or beloved of me. However, those who devote themselves to me with devotion, they are in me. I am also in them. Even if a person of very bad conduct devotes himself to me following no other, he should be considered only saintly. He is embarked on right determination. Very quickly he becomes a person whose self is virtuous and attains eternal peace. O son of Kunti, do know for certain, my devotee does not perish. Making themselves depend on me, even the lowly born, as well as women, traders, and servants reach the supreme status. How much more so the meritorious brahmanas, devotees, and royal sages? Having come to this transient unhappy world, do devote yourself to me. Sri Krishna continues teaching Arjuna that the real self maintains an attitude of evenness toward all beings. The supreme Brahman is never partial in any way. It has neither hatred nor favor for anyone. The aspirant who devotes his life to Brahman alone remains in Brahman consciousness, and Brahman dwells in him. When the yogi attains the height of tranquility beyond body, breath, senses, and mental consciousness, and maintains constant consciousness of Brahman within himself, he realizes that there is none who is a friend to him, and none whom he can hate, for he has gone beyond the pairs of opposites and has attained the state of evenness. His life is completely transformed because he realizes the omnipresence of Brahman within himself, and himself in Brahman. It is just like a river meeting the ocean. When a river meets the ocean, it becomes the ocean. Constant consciousness of Brahman leads the yogi to attain such a state. History reveals that many people of ill conduct were able to liberate themselves by becoming solely devoted to the Lord. Many such people, after complete self-transformation, became well-known and respected sages. Having resolved all of their conflicts, even ill-behaved men can attain the height of equilibrium. Therefore, everyone has the opportunity to reform, improve, and unfold himself. That is possible when one turns his mind inward and with full concentration and meditation attains a state of tranquility. Tranquil-minded people neither hate nor lust. When the human mind wanders in the grooves of hatred and lust, it becomes blinded by the pairs of opposites. But one who has attained the summit of equanimity behaves with evenness. He then performs his duty righteously, impartially, and in a non-attached way. Such a sage attains everlasting peace and is not lost in the jungle of confusion. A true devotee of the Lord is in peace always. Verse 32 states that even the lowly born and people without much intelligence can attain enlightenment if they devote their lives to the Lord alone. The words lowly born refer to those who do not get much opportunity to study and learn, and who do not have means and amenities by birth. Those who do not have the opportunity to have a good upbringing can also attain the highest state. Those who have already trodden the path in their past lives are born with certain virtues and samskaras that lead them again on the path of enlightenment. Then it is easy for them to accomplish or complete that which they could not in their previous lives. This lesson teaches all aspirants not to waste their time and energy in worldly pleasures. It is best for them to devote all their time to God in this mortal world of ours. A life devoted to the Lord is the best of all lives. That is the purpose of human birth. Verse 34.
Manmanabhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mame vaishyasi yuktvaivam atmanam matparayanaha.
Let your mind be fixed on me, my devotee, sacrifice unto me, bow unto me, intent on me, thus joining yourself in yoga, you will come only to me. The last verse in this chapter instructs the earnest aspirant to systematically attain the highest state of perfection. The mind should be wholly applied and devoted to the real self alone. The Lord of life seated in the deepest chamber of our being should be the sole object of meditation. When the mind is not allowed to roam about, but is focused on the Lord only, it is purified and becomes one-pointed and inward. When a meditative mind flows uninterruptedly to its object, it attains a state of tranquility, peace, and happiness. A consistent method of meditation, contemplation, and prayer, along with devotion to none else but the Lord, helps one to attain this state. Such an aspirant sacrifices all the fruits of his actions to the Lord alone. His mind, action, and speech are fully dedicated to the Lord. His aim of life is the attainment of the Lord. Such yogis are liberated. They attain the highest perfection and become one with the highest. Here ends Chapter 9, in which the secret knowledge of the royal path, called Raja Vidya, is imparted.